Bill Apter has been in the pro wrestling business for over 50 years.
Hey, talking here with Arn Anderson. Arn, first of all, your height and weight.
6'1", 255.
And now subscribers to VOC Nation Premium get exclusive access to Bill Apter's archived audio footage.
And where's your hometown?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, and give us something about your back. First of all, your relationship to Ole Anderson.
Ole is my...
Subscription to VOC Nation Premium starts at just $3 a month and includes commercial-free audio and video versions of our top podcasts.
Okay, we're speaking here with the manager of the World Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tarzan Tyler and Luke Ram, and he's sort of glowing tonight about a new prospect we haven't heard of yet.
And for just $9 a month, Apter's archives are all yours.
Would you tell us who this new prospect
is? Well, I'll tell you, Bill, I've searched the world, and I finally found the true world champion. I finally found...
What's your opinion of Ivan Koloff winning the title from Bruno Sammartino?
Well, I think... I don't know what to say, but I want to say one thing. Bruno was a hell of a champion. You know?
Hear exclusive interviews with the greatest performers of all time.
This is Bill Apter, and once again, we're speaking here with... Bruno Sammartino. Bruno, first of all, how did you and Bruiser lose that title to the Valiants?
Well, actually, it was a very unusual loss, if you want to call it.
They lost. Didn't have anything to do with it?
Well, yes, but the whole thing is this, that the rules, as I always understood them, was that the title could only be lost by pin or submission, which is the same rules as my title, the World Wrestling Federation. That night, it was...
To sign up, it's very simple. Head to premium.vocnation.com or go to patreon.com/vocnation. VOC Nation takes you behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. No BS with the Bull, Manny Fernandez, worldwide in the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. And Manny, I'm feeling a little bit better this week. Last week was just a terrible week. My kids were sick. Thankfully, all the COVID tests were negative, and we're back to normal. The sniffling's dried up, and I had the worst headache of my life. I've only felt that bad one other time. So I was sure it was COVID, but it wasn't. So all's well that ends well.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. You know, you don't want to be here. Thank God you're over there. If you were here in Texas, on this wind and storms and rain and cold weather, you'd probably feel it worse. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty good. You got rid of that headache. The only time I had a headache like that is when we got hit by that 18-wheeler and messed me up for months.
Yeah.
That 18-wheeler, you know, took a lot of people surprised that I lived through that accident. But, you know, I guess I'm hard-headed. But that was the worst accident, headache I ever had.
Well, thank God that you're alive. And yeah. Spring has sprung. Optimism is high. The vaccination rates are high. Cases are coming down in areas of the country. So let's pray for normalcy and bright, sunny skies ahead.
Yeah, prayers for all the people that get vaccinated and hopefully all the other ones that... we'll get encouraged to get themselves vaccinated so the world could get back to its usual. This whole country could go back to being a great nation again, you know?
Did you get your jab yet?
Excuse me?
Did you get your shot yet?
I got my first one. I did my second one April 22nd.
I'm doing the one and done Johnson & Johnson on Wednesday. I can't wait.
Well, I got mine done at the VA and they gave us the Moderna. And it was that was a lot of fun because there were so many vets there. Everybody got to mingle and talk, and
nice.
You know, it's a love different relationship when veterans get together that's been somewhere where they had to struggle to survive and stuff, and the camaraderie and just being together with somebody that you know shared that with you is so important to me. You know that everybody, all of us, are doing good, and hopefully nobody's homeless on the street and. You know, suffering, you know, from drug use or whatever, just watching over each other is a big, big thing for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And again, I said it many times, we thank you for your service And I know that the people out there are grateful too. And they're grateful for the memories that you gave us in the professional wrestling ring. I know somebody else that's grateful for the memories and the experience we saw. If you were watching the WWE Hall of Fame this week, and it was a nice moment for me, you know, it was like a proud moment for somebody in the family. I was watching the Hall of Fame. I saw the Rob Van Dam speech, and out of nowhere, Rob Van Dam thanks the one and only Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez. So that's kind of cool. You had some good moments with Mr. Van Dam over the years, Manny?
Oh, yeah. When he was young, he came in and he worked for a guy named Greg Price. And we had a couple matches throughout Georgia and stuff. And the kid was so respectful and listened. And I guess he was, like you said, he was taught right. He was taught right. He was taught respect. And that's, you know, and going into that when I was younger and training people, mentoring people, everybody knew I was hot-headed. I had a quick temper, and if you did something out of the norm in the wrestling ring, I shut you down and did something, or, you know, you got put in your place right away. You got a potato, you know, you got a receipt for it. You gave me a potato, I gave you a receipt, and you got a good receipt for it. That's what they were called back in the day. The guy, ooh, you nailed him with a potato. Well, here comes a receipt, and it's not going to be nice. You know, stuff like that. So, yeah, we had the first time we had a great match. First time in a little town in Georgia, Hartwell, Georgia, I think it was. And we were in there, and Rob knows his karate, and he's so limber, and he could stretch and do the splits and spinning kicks like the guy from Bloodsport and all that. Yeah, like Rob, the original Rob Van Dam, you know, the movie star or whatever.
Yeah, Jean-Claude Van Dam, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, he could do the same. You know, Van Damme, Rob could do the same thing to him. So I took, you know, I let him do that. I let him be himself. You know, like you said, people let him be himself. I let him be himself. And we called some of that stuff. And I came off the rope maybe too hard or too fast, or he was too close. And I called for a spinning kick to the face. And I caught his heel right in my mouth and lips. And it busted my mouth open. I was bleeding. I turned around, loud as I could, say the F word, you know. And I turned around with both fence clips, and I looked, and the ring was empty. I didn't see anybody. Where the hell did Rob go? You know, I was like, where the hell did this kid go? Well, come to find out, referee goes, he took off to the dressing room because he was afraid you were supposed to that.
Oh, boy. Was that early in his career? When was that?
Yeah, it was real early in his career. I was probably maybe the first five matches, within his first five, six matches, you know.
Wow.
It was really, really early. He still had the baby face and everything. I had to go talk to him. I said, oh, man, you know, nobody's fault. Things like that happen, you know, but expect the receipt, you know. But, you know, it's just, back then when I was young and stupid, I had a very bad temper and I was quick to react, you know. So everybody that I trained knew that, everybody that I mentioned knew that. So they knew that when I reacted, it wasn't going to be in a good way. So they got out of the way. Yeah.
Did you know that Rob Van Dam was going to mention your name on the Hall of Fame ceremony?
I didn't know. I don't watch that. I just knew that my phone blew up after he did that. All the people that I have trained or mentored or everything were texting me and sending messages like, hey, you know, some people send congratulations, you know, Rob Van Dam mentioned you in his speech. Congratulations to my coach, my mentor and trainer, you know, people like that, people that I trained that are really good, but never got a chance to sign because of one reason or another. But, you know, it just blowed up and then people were sending it on Facebook and I appreciate that. You know, no, I never knew that. I know that we've been close throughout the years when I see him, you know. When we go to these conventions that I'm going to next week, if Rob's there, he's always going to come over and hug me and thank me and stuff, you know, like they all do. I mean, that's what we talk about.
Yeah.
It's not training people to be wrestlers. It's training somebody to have respect for you and the way you do things and the way you teach things. You know, some of these guys just pay their money to some idiot and then go off and they don't care about that idiot because basically they didn't do nothing for them. Take
right.
The money here, right. You know, you earned the respect because that's what you gave them. You respected them enough to train them and teach them what you were taught by the old timers. passing that knowledge on. It's not my knowledge. The knowledge that was passed on to me for the people before me and the people before them. And then you pass that knowledge on to people and you pray that they respect that. And I can honestly say, all the people that I mentored or taught and went on to make their name for themselves, all respect that. They have that kind of respect. And I'm proud of that. That's more than money could buy. That's priceless. To me, in my book, that's priceless.
Yeah, I was looking on, speaking of respect and admiration, I was looking on Twitter. I usually post the show and VOC Nation post the show. Follow us on Twitter, by the way, at VOC Nation. You can get all of the shows that happen on the VOC Nation network feed, not just this, and we'll run them down later. But anyway, I saw our show that included some praise to R-Truth, Ron Killings, and you were talking about training him and working with him over the years. And I saw a tweet from R-Truth about the show here. So we thank him for listening. And I know that's somebody that you train that means a lot to you.
Yeah. Yeah, R-Truth, yes. Him is, R-Truth and I have a real close bond because of everything, you know. He stuck around longer than anybody I know. And he was that good. And he would go up and down the road with me. I'd take him New York, New Jersey, get him on shows, independent shows. And then I'd work him. I did the same thing with R-Truth as I did, because R-Truth was flexible too. He could do the splits and all that, jump high in the air. So I took and used that when he worked against me. I let him do all that. I never try to curtail anybody's style to mine. I let them be themselves. It's like the reason I couldn't stand Ric Flair when I wrestled him for the world title is because he only had one match. That's all he ever did, the same thing over and over and over. And that stuff was boring to me. It was so daggone boring. I couldn't stand it. When they told me I'd never wrestle for the world title again, I thanked them. I didn't care. It wasn't no big deal to me. It didn't mean nothing. I was still making a good daggone living and putting food on the table for my family, my, you know, my wife and kids and all them. But, you know, I could care less for the world title. Who cares? I knew what wrestling was. Who cares? If it came to a shoot, he definitely wouldn't be the world champion if it was me and him, you know. But it just, I never would take away somebody's style. They have to be themselves. Right. That was R-Truth. That was Rob Van Dam. That's, and I'm glad. I mean, I'm proud that he listened to the show. I'm pretty sure he got a kick out of it.
Yeah, yeah. And just real quick on R-Truth, it's hard to believe that he's almost 50 years old. I mean, you don't look at him. He looks in great shape and he still moves around very well, but he's 50 years old, still active and pretty much a regular on WWE TV.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was at 50 years old. I was still doing the same thing, still doing the same style. In fact, today, if I didn't have this bad hip, I'd still be doing the same style. I could still do all that. You know, 40... it doesn't go away because you get age. And you just get smarter with age. You limited most of the stuff you used to do, but you still stay the same.
At 41, I could barely mow the lawn. Getting back to Ric Flair, and I know this is off topic, and we're going to talk some more about your upbringing and the territories that you came through and the different personality of each territory. We'll do that in a second. But I just want to get back to Ric Flair because I know that people will get on me if I don't stay on that. You didn't like working against Ric Flair because Ric, you know, a lot of people consider him one of the greatest, if not the greatest performers of all time. But I guess I can see what you're saying. He worked the same style, well, same match, front bump, you know, flip into the corner, similar stuff, right?
Yeah. You know, the thing about that, it just bored me. You know, I wrestled everybody that ever was a world champion, that ever wore that world title. And they all had different styles, from Dory to Terry to Harley. You know, it's just everybody, Jack Briscoe, you know, all them guys, they had a different style and you could wrestle into their style without shutting you down. And Ric Flair took that away from me when I had the first match with him. It was like, I couldn't do the things I did against all these other world champions because he wanted to do the flip in the corner. I'm like, dude, you do this every time. It's getting kind of stupid. We got to stand there and wait for you. Yeah, that's pretty dumb. I didn't like to be exposed that I was this total You're like, these idiots that do that, throw the guy out on the floor, and the guy's out there, and they take forever to climb up on the top rope, and the guy stands there and acts all stupid and then turns around. Right. And, you look like an idiot.
Yep.
And that wasn't me. I didn't like, that's why I got a lot of heat in the business. Yeah. Most of my style was almost like a shoot. You know, I had Barry, what was his Playboy Buddy Rose. He come up to me, I had a match with him, and he come up to me and said, brother, I've watched you. Man, you killed people out there. I said, dude, it's a work. This is how I do it. Well, he was so scared that I was going to hurt him in the ring. He kept asking me, telling me he had high blood pressure, diabetes, and all that. I'm going like, damn, dude, it's a work, you know? And, but my style was so believable, a lot of people thought I was hurting people. But yeah. That's the way I was taught. That's the way I was taught, and that's the way I wanted to wrestle. You know, I wanted to wrestle solid. I was a solid wrestler. And, you know, Ric Flair and all that. I mean, a lot of people, I think it's great. It's like, you know, somebody made a joke when they try to compare Ric Flair to Tom Brady. Come on, get real, dude. You think Ric Flair could do what Tom Brady could do? You're stupid. Tom Brady plays for real. He gets hit for real. You know, that stuff's real. I played the game most of my life. So I know, yeah. So there's no comparison there, you know.
Flair, Flair. I remember you. You remember Joel Goodhart? He was TWA. Yeah. Yep, Joel.
Yeah, we're in the Joel real good. I worked for him.
Precursor to ECW, right? A lot of people don't know this, but if it wasn't for Joel Goodhart, ECW might not exist because a lot of the TWA guys went over and formed Eastern Championship Wrestling.
Yep. Not at all. Joel Goodhart was a real good promoter. I worked for him many a times. He had good things in Philly there.
Yeah, for a couple years. But when I was a kid, I listened, and a lot of the reasons I ended up getting into radio was because of Joel Goodhart. I used to listen to, he had a show on in Philadelphia called Wrestling Radio on, at that time it was Sports Radio 610 WIP. And every week he would kind of break the third wall for pro wrestling. And as a kid, you know, I watched on TV and I didn't know what was real, what wasn't real. I knew it didn't seem right. But Joel's position at that point was that WWF had come out and said that this stuff is predetermined, but nobody else did, so everything else is real. And that was generally the idea I took, Manny. But what always got me was when I would watch a Ric Flair match, I would think as a kid, there's no way that anybody would flop and fall on their face, you know, the whole staggered cartoon front bump that he did. And that was the thing that said to me, well, this doesn't look real to me. And I feel like the NWA style in the 80s was more of a sport style. You know, you could believe it, but there were some of the things, and Flair was a great performer, but some of the things he did just took that realism away. And I think that's what you're kind of saying too.
Yeah, exactly. You hit the nail right on the head. Yeah, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do a lot of things. It's like, I love Jimmy Valiant to death and, you know, and everything. But once I was in the doghouse and Dusty decided to team with him, I just couldn't play that character. I couldn't be that character. If you watch matches or tag matches, you'll see that I'm standoffish. I'll get away from him, let him do his thing, do that honky-donky stuff and all that crap. And then when we did the turn, I had to wrestle Jimmy Valiant, and I sat him down. And I said, look, dude, I don't do stupid things. I don't do the poke me in the butt, the dead possum thing. I don't do none of that stuff, okay? I won't do that. So don't try it with me. I will not react to it. Do not do that with me. So, you know, that's why that angle didn't go that far, because I wasn't going to do those stupid things. I just couldn't do it. It wasn't in me to do it.
Yeah.
I just, you know, that was not my style.
Sure.
And I just, you know, I'd rather get beat up.
Yeah, you have to work with people that can complement your style. Those are the best matches. It doesn't have to be two of the guys that do the same exact thing, but it has to be complementary, and you have to be able to absorb each other's styles, right?
Right, correct. Right. That's why I used to love to work with Ivan Koloff. He was so aggressive. He'd turn around and kick you 20 times in the face. He'd stay right on top of you, man. You could sell your butt off because he stayed right on you. You had to fight. you really had to fight. Ivan was no joke. I loved Ivan, you know, but there's guys that style like that, you know, but I guess I couldn't work the goofy style, the Tennessee style, Tennessee sure. high spot style, you know, that wasn't me. I couldn't work the Tennessee style. The as Memphis, they called it.
Memphis.
Yeah.
Style.
Memphis.
On a future show, I gotta get some road stories out of you for Ric Flair. I've heard some great ones before. I love hearing Honky Tonk Man talking about Flair. We won't do it today, but I'll get you on a future show. We're going to talk about territories today. We're going to kind of take a little journey through some of your career. I'm going to start when we come back from the break with the TWA, because I'm fascinated by that promotion. We'll get into that. We'll probably continue that for the next couple of weeks here on No BS with the Bull Manny Fernandez. Make sure you go on to the VOC Nation shop. Go to shirts.vocnation.com or look for VOC Nation, voice of choice, VOC Nation on the Pro Wrestling Tees store. It's all one word, and get the Manny Fernandez, No BS with the Bull t-shirt. It's there. So especially when there's a sale that comes up, make sure you go on, get Manny's shirt, support him and support the show. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. This is No BS with the Bull, Manny Fernandez, right here on the VOC Nation Wrestling Network.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
VOC Nation takes wrestling fans behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Get stories and inside information from people who worked on the other side of the curtain. Follow the VOC Nation Wrestling Network podcast feed and get weekly shows from hosts like Bill After, The Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez, Ken Resnick, The Maestro, Shelly Martinez, Wes Briscoe, and more. Visit VOCNation.com for more information and follow us on Twitter at VOCNation. No BS with the Bull, Manny Fernandez. Welcome back. And remember, you can listen to this show commercial free if you want by subscribing to premium.vocnation.com or go to Patreon/VOCNation. And you get all of our shows commercial free. Most of them audio and video. This show is audio only. And again, remember, I said support Manny by buying a shirt at the Pro Wrestling Tees store. You can't search Manny Fernandez, but just search VOC Nation and you get all of our shirts, but Manny's is on there as well. Manny, I want to take a journey through your career in the next couple of weeks, and we'll go through the different territories and some of the stories of each one as we take that journey. But before I start, and I want to start with Goodhart because we were talking about Joel, and that might take us to the end of the show. I don't know. But before we get into that, traveling, were you a road guy? Did you go up and down the road with a lot of guys? Were you a big traveler?
Yeah, when we used to have the territory days, you know, when I started back in the day, it was fun to go to, you know, 3-4 people in a car. Everybody shares gas and stuff, you know, when territories were around. Yeah, it was fun to travel with the guys because you had so many stories. You created stories. That's how you created your stories. You know, guys pulling over on the side of the road to use to go pee and piss or whatever. And the other guys jumping in the car and taking off, leaving them behind. Those kind of stories are come on, and two guys would be standing there talking to the guy in the middle peeing, and both of the other guys on the left or right are peeing down his leg, you know, those kind of stories, fun, ribbing each other like that. Yeah, and just you create stories that last a lifetime, things that you do, you know, crazy things you do up and down the road, driving by each other, handing beers in and out the window as the cars go by, you know, silly things that only wrestlers probably did, you know, but yeah, I enjoyed the heck out of that in the smaller territories.
Ken Resnick on Wrestling with History. Ken, as you might know, was a broadcaster in the AWA and the WWF for a lot of the 80s, and then he did some other stuff in the 90s. But Ken was saying that we were talking about the Hall of Fame and some of the ribs that the British Bulldogs did. And Ken was saying that ribs, because the guys were traveling sometimes 26, 27 days in the month. You're in a different town, you know, airport, hotel, arena, hotel, airport, and the ribs were a way to keep people sane because there was just so much going on and there's no consistency. You couldn't really see your family. It was just a way to break the monotony.
Yeah, exactly. You broke the monotony by playing ribs on each other. Like you're super gluing somebody's doorknob when they touch it, you know. You know, all that stuff can't keep you from going crazy because it's true. You traveled on the road. You got off one airplane, got in a taxi cab, or had somebody pick you up and take you to the arena. You spent hours in the arena, either warming up, working out, getting ready for the show. Then after the show, you go out to beers, have clubs, have some beers, and have some fun with everybody around. And then you go to your hotel, get a few hours sleep, jump back on the airplane. And it was this way. It was this way 7 days a week. And with WCW, especially on Sunday when it was, you know, the Sunday afternoon show and then an evening show. So you actually did 8 days a week.
Wow.
You know, and you were hardly ever home unless we did in WCW. You were home if we ran Charlotte, Independence Coliseum in Charlotte. Then you were home. Or Greensboro, you were close to being home. But outside of that, you were on the road, especially when you got WCW. Guys, we were all over the country, California, all the way coast to coast, East Coast, West Coast, in between the Midwest, everything. So the only way you stayed sane was to play ribs on each other.
So in a territory, I mean, was there a consistent loop? Like when you traveled in a territory, would you go, you mentioned eight towns over 7 days, but was it a consistent thing where every Monday you were in the same place and every Tuesday you were in the same place? Is that how it worked?
Yes. There were certain towns that you ran on certain days. Monday, Fayetteville. Tuesday would be a spot show or something. And you'd be able to go. Greensboro was a big show on a different day. And it was so much travel and so many things that would go on before that, because all the towns later on became longer distance. Like we'd do a California loop, right? And then we'd do an Ohio loop, and then we had the Georgia loop, and then we had a Carolina loop, and New Jersey, New York loop. So we did a lot of loops, and drove you nuts, because sometimes you got, why are we flying this far away to do a show when we could do all these and draw people in our area, in the Mid-Atlantic area? But no, we had to be. That started the downfall of the territories, you know, going into other people's territories and taking it over.
Yep. Is that your dog in the background that I hear? Did I lose you, Manny? Did I lose you? I know you got some weather. I didn't know if that was your dog or if that was, huh?
No, it's just weather storing it off. You get big storms, that wind sometimes will knock my Wi-Fi off.
Yuck. Well, we'll try to get through it. We'll try to power through before you lose your power there. Listen, before we go, we'll go to Amarillo where you started. And that's where Terry Funk and Dick Murdoch broke you into the business. But I want to spend some time because we talked about Joe Goodhart. And I said earlier, that was part of my early fandom and why I got into sports radio back in the day and ultimately why I'm doing this now. Joe Goodhart ran the TWA in the late 80s into maybe 90 or 91. What's your memories of working with Joel Goodhart in the TWA?
Joel Goodhart was a great person, very good person, very knowledgeable about the business, and a very, very wise promoter. He was smart. He knew that when WCW was running Philadelphia and that area of New Jersey and Philly and all the towns around there, that we drew good. You know, a lot of fans. Every time we'd wrestle in the old Civic Center there in Philly, it was sold out every single time. So he took that after, you know, we stopped going there. Crockett stopped going there. Joel took that into account and thought he could do good, and he did. He did good. I did many shows for him, for his TWA shows. And all I can say about Joe is he was one of the better promoters I ever, independent promoters I ever worked for. Because he did good. Every one of his shows did really, really good. And he had good talent. He had a bunch of guys that could work. So that was the main thing. And he had a bunch of guys that came out of there and went to ECW that could all work their pants off. They were great guys.
Yeah, I think if you think about the people that came out of that, and he also owned Ringmasters Wrestling School in Philadelphia. But you think about the guys that came out of there, I think the Sandman, you had the Blue Meanie was part of Goodhart, Bay Ragney, who was Chubby Dudley. There's just a bunch. Stevie Richards, I think, was part of the TWA. There were some other independent legends like DC Drake worked in the TWA. Who did you work? What was your most memorable match working for Joel Goodhart?
Jeez, you two, you're going way back.
And you know, it's obviously probably more memorable for me than it is for you. That's just one dot on your.
I got brain warp when it comes to that. He had so many good guys there. I mean, I could honestly, I can't remember, but I know that every time I went there to work for Joel, he had great guys. So I always had good matches with those guys. I mean, they were there and they were good and exciting matches. But geez, I couldn't tell you. It wasn't none of those guys you mentioned. I know that, you know. Honestly, I can't remember. I can just tell you this. I know they were great guys and I had great matches with them.
All right, let's go back to Amarillo now that I got my TWA itch. I scratched it. Let's go back to Amarillo, and that's where you started. You break in with Dory Funk, Terry Funk. They break into the business. They train you. Talk about your start in Amarillo and your first couple of matches. How did that happen? How did that come together?
Well, it all came together because, you know, Murdoch and Mulligan got together. Well, the first match I ever had, okay, when I was through training, Mulligan and Murdoch, and because Terry and Dory were mainly in Japan a lot, so it was mainly Mulligan, Murdoch, Dennis Stamp, and whoever, Nick Kozak, those guys I told you about. When yep. Nick and Dennis, I guess Dennis told Dickie, he says, I think the kid's ready to have his first match. So I was told, hey, you're going to have a TV match, see how you do on TV. So I was getting a little excited, a little nervous. I had a TV match, TV taping, and my opponent was Blackjack Mulligan. Oh. I was like, oh, dang. Oh, my God. What's going to happen here? So we go out there, and my first match ever on anything, but it was a TV taping match, and Mulligan ties up with me, backs me up into the middle of the rope, raises that big, huge arm of his, and puts my face back. He says, welcome to the business, kid. Wham! He hit me so damn hard, I couldn't breathe for 10 minutes. Oh, that man had the biggest arms and hands I've ever seen on a human being. And his brother, he took the wind out of me, and I swear to you, I couldn't breathe. So I got welcomed into the business pretty solidly, like I like to be welcomed, you know? I love to work that kind of solid. Where your chest and your back, you really knock the heck out of somebody, right? And well, he knocked the heck out of me. So that went over good, you know. That went over good. And then after that, I had another one against James J.J. Dillon. And I went out there wrestling. And J.J. was a little worried because of my shooting background. But I went out there and did what I was told to do. And that's how they tested me. They put me on TV to do these matches. You know, where I was getting beat and everything like that. They wanted to see if I had that attitude, that shooter attitude that says, you know, I'm not going to let you do this. But, you know, I know what wrestling is. So I went out there and, by then I realized, hey, this is something that you can make money at and, you know, do the best you can. So I went out there and, you know, did it for Mulligan, did it for JJ. And they liked what I did and they put me on the road. And I went off the road and then started traveling with Tito Santana, which we know with Merced Solis and Ted DiBiase and Stan Lane. And we had fun in those days because it was for the car. And if we only made $25 a night back in the 70s, that was a lot of money with four people in the car. That's $100. Yeah. You get a case of beer and 20 hot dogs or hamburgers and hit the road drinking and eating. Telling stories.
Manny, so your first match with Mulligan, this is what, 77, 78?
The end of 78, yes. 78. Going into 79.
And so you worked that circuit in Amarillo. Who was the booker?
The booker was Mulligan and Murdoch. They owned the territory.
So Mulligan.
Were
you just a job guy or were they? So when you're starting and you're in these matches against, you know, big, big stars, are you working job matches or were you positioned as an up and comer?
No, I was an up-and-comer, but they wanted to see what kind of, they tested my attitude. But then, see, everybody knew that I'm getting fights all the time. Sure. And all through Amarillo, Canyon, Texas, Amarillo, where I played football, I had a reputation of going to bars and getting fights. I mean, everywhere I went, people, hey, hi, Manny, can you try not to get a fight tonight? You know, that kind of attitude. Because people got on my nerves. Honestly, I quarantined myself 40, 50 years ago. Because people could get on my nerves. They'd get on my nerves and I'd punch them out. So, you know, they knew that. And they wanted to see if I was going to do what I was told to do, if I had to do it, and do it properly instead of trying to be bullish and say, heck no, I'm not. I'll shoot on you and tie you up and beat you that way. No, you know, I just did that. And they saw that I had the proper. That's why, you know, I didn't last long in Amarillo. They sent me to Florida, but they brought me up and they grew me, but they wanted to make sure my head was in the right place. And I understood.
And Amarillo was part of the NWA, right? I mean, somewhat, and all of these NWA territories, they're separate, but they work together, right? I mean, they're all working together. There's one major champion, right? Which is in those days, the Harley Race, Ric Flair, Terry Funk, you know, some combination of those guys.
I didn't know when you bring up Ric Flair, he wasn't even in my picture. I didn't even know about Ric Flair. Never heard of the guy until I got to the Mid-Atlantic. Okay. Never heard a word about Ric Flair, ever. Knew who this guy was, what he was, nothing. I knew about Harley Race, Dory Funk, Terry Funk, those world champions, and Jack Briscoe. Those are the world champions I knew and grew up with. I never knew about this clown now. Ric Flair. I just never knew about that clown. Sorry. I mean, everybody wants to praise the guy. To me, he's a clown. He's a clown, period. You know, I don't care what anybody thinks. They may think I'm a clown. I'm straight up. To me, he's a damn clown. Biggest brown-nosed clown in the world. Never seen a guy kiss ass so bad in my life.
Is that
ever?
So it wasn't just the working style. It was his backstage politics and...
I'll never forget the moment one time Wahoo and me were there at the Crockett office getting ready to do promos because we always did promos and we were Crockett there on Woodlawn in Charlotte and come by and, you know, and all of a sudden we're making big money and all this and we're buying private planes and Wahoo didn't like that. And one time Flair and Crockett came out of his office and they were walking down to where we cut the promos and Wahoo told Crockett, don't turn the corner too hard. You might break his nose off.
Honky Tonk Man has told stories about Ric Flair going out. And I'm not hating on Flair. These are your stories, not mine. But I'm just recounting a story that Honky Tonk Man told me where he said Ric Flair would go out with a bunch of guys, run up the bar tab, and then leave and the tab was unpaid, and it was left for everybody else to deal with.
Yeah, he's done that to a couple promoters too. He did that to a promoter that was in Virginia Beach that I was on the same show as him. In fact, I was still, this is about 15 years ago, when I found out I was on the show, I said, I'll go slap the living hell out of that piece of garbage. And that's when I was still hot in. And I was going to go do it, but everybody cut me off. No, Manny, don't. You know, he was on a show in Virginia Beach. He ran up the bar tab because he wanted more money from the promoter because the show did good. And the promoter said, no, we agreed on one thing. And I said, man, typical. So he ran up the bar tab at the bar for like $2,000, buying all these Dom Perignon and shit. Like, you know, he was a big shot. And he took off, and the promoter ended up with $2,000 bar bill, bar tab, you know. So that ain't funny. That kind of stuff ain't no good. Yeah. You know, yeah, you know, when you super glue somebody's boots to the ground, that's a rib. When you padlock your bag to the daggone locker, that's a good rib. You know, stuff like when you take a turd in somebody else's bag, yeah, that's a good rib to live by. But when you make them spend money and cost them money, that's not a rib.
Yeah, well, $2,000 is $2,000 doesn't matter when in time that is. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. You know, and yeah, those kind of things, you know, I didn't show for those kind of things. Like when you talk about world champions, I was around four of the greatest world champions ever. And of course, Ivan Koloff, WWF world champion, superstar Billy Graham, WWF world champion. I had all those guys and they were fantastic. And, you know, the only thing I could say about Billy Graham, he was too soft. I could barely feel him. I used to yell at him, please, sir, hit me harder.
Billy,
I mean, those Billy. Guys were good. You know, those guys were fantastic. I enjoyed the heck out of that. I mean, honest to God, I was blessed. I was blessed by the talent they put in front of me when I went to every territory and worked on top. You got brought in to do that, to make that territory. You got brought in to pop a territory. You know, some guys that could be over in one territory, they bring in because he's always so strong there. They bring him to this other territory to see if he could pop it. If the territory was going down, bring the guy in to see if he could pop. Some guys couldn't do that. Sure. There's a lot of guys that couldn't do that. They could be over one territory and fill in another one. And thank God I never had that experience. I was very fortunate. But I was taught right. I was taught right when I came into the territory, how to act, how to respect. I had all that behind me. But, you know, getting away from that, you know, that's why to tell you the truth, when I went from all these territories and then I worked with Joe Goodhart as an independent promoter, I felt like I was in a little territory. The way he ran his shows was like being in the territory. Right. And that's what I respected about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I mean, and he had some fanfare back in those days. You know, I mean, a small promotion, but no WWF or NWA at that time for sure. But Joel did a good job with that TWA. Manny, just to put a bow on this, and then we'll talk about Florida next week because that was substantial for you and you had a title run there. In Amarillo, you were only there 6 months, maybe, right? Less than a year.
Yes, I wasn't there long. I was there to be groomed. I worked the opening matches for 15, 20 minute Broadways. I learned how to put in time in the ring, my psychology. They put me in there with the old timers, Alex Perez and Dennis Stamp. Said these guys that would groom you, take a green kid under the wing and groom them for 20 minutes, or they try to blow you up so they could teach you. Take your time, kid. Don't be in a rush, kid. Sure. You know, stuff like that. You're going to get blowed up in 5 minutes, kid. And sometimes it was true. You go so hard for 5 minutes, you're excited. And you realize you got 15 more to go and you're already dead tired. You're going, oh, my God. You know? So, yeah. Yeah, it was great. Being in Amarillo and being taught and brought up and groomed properly, I owe that to that, all the people there. All them people that took the time to work with me, took the time to see something, like Rob Van Dam said, you know, people saw something in him. And I saw it in them when they're very young, yep. stage of his career. They saw something in it. Of course, you're going to push it. You're not going to take somebody like that and try to squash him or try to, you know, kill him off. No, you take advantage of that talent and you take it and you groom it and you hope and pray that it works out, that he draws money for everybody and everybody puts money in their pocket. That's what this business is about. Not anymore. Of course, you get paid whether you're good or bad.
Right.
And a lot of these guys, they signed the W. Trust me, they wouldn't make a dime in the old days. They wouldn't even be the opening bout.
Yeah, yeah. You had to draw money. You had to draw money. You had to build the house. Money, yeah. It wasn't about TV.
You didn't get paid by merchandise. You had to draw money. You know, it's all about that.
All right, Manny, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up. And you got some things coming up. I want to talk about that before we end the show. This is No BS with the Bull, Manny Fernandez, worldwide in the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. For over 10 years, VOC Nation has taken listeners behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Our hosts are not only experts on the business, but have lived in the business. Subscribe and hear weekly podcasts from hosts like legendary pro wrestling journalist Bill Apter, former Impact Wrestling star Wes Briscoe, former WWE and AWA broadcaster Ken Resnick, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, former WCW star The Maestro, NWA legend The Raging Bull Manny Fernandez, and much more. VOC Nation programming is free on most major podcasting apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Radio.com. And video podcast and bonus content is available on Patreon for as low as $3 a month. What are you waiting for? Head to VOCNation.com and dig into the most comprehensive podcast network built for pro wrestling fans. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at VOC Nation Wrestling Network and follow us on Twitter at VOC Nation. All right, No BS with the Bull, Manny Fernandez. I'm Bruce Wirt, by the way, the voice of choice. I'm honored to host this show for Manny. I'm also, I do Bill Apter and Ken Resnick, Wrestling with History. And for too many years, I've funded this network. Shame on me. My wife hates it. So I hope that you tune into all the VOC Nation Wrestling Network programming, not just this show or Wrestling with History, but we got In the Room with Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and former WCW star, The Maestro. Got Shelly Live with Shelly Martinez and her sister, Danielle. Sassy Steffi comes with you with Talking Sass. Wes Briscoe on the Briscoe and Big Ace show. That's on the weekends. Lots of great programming here on VOC Nation. My Big Break with Jerry Strauss. Tons of good stuff. So check that out. Jerry Strauss last week had Joy Giovanni, former WWE diva, Candice Michelle before that. And this week he's got Sassy Steffi, one of our family members here in the VOC Nation. So go to the VOC Nation Wrestling Network podcast feed. You get all of our shows with one click, or go to vocnation.com and you can check around the site and see what you've missed to date if this is the first time that you're listening. Manny, you got something coming up. You got a big, we're getting back to normal. There's conventions and appearances coming up. What do you got?
We got a big convention coming up, or virtual signing and a meet and greet at Captain's Corner in Albany, New York with Nick. We're going to be up there this weekend, this coming next weekend, 17th and 18th, where we're going to auction off some of these No BS with the Bull t-shirts and talk a little game as we talk here and enjoy the sights. Yeah, it's coming up April 17th and 18th.
And you're traveling? And you're going to be on the road for this, or is this virtual?
Oh, yeah. I don't fly anymore. I have had too many close calls with flying, so I drive everywhere now. Plus, I get to see the country again. You know, I got sick and tired of flying 25 years of my life. Everywhere we went, we flew instead of driving. So it's good to see the country as the country gets more populated and growing into other things that are around this country that I miss.
Sure. That's awesome. Well, I know next time that I'm in Texas, I'm coming by. We're going to hang out. Once the world gets back to normal. Here,
we'll go take you get one of them big steer burgers. Big steer burgers. All right, I got to say one thing, though. It was funny because I listened to Don Morocco's Making Waves podcast.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how weak this year's WrestleMania is.
Oh, my. Yeah.
I kind of laughed because I know Don. I had a program with him before. I enjoyed him. He was a great worker, man. Great worker. But he was just cracking on how bad it was in WrestleMania. But it seems to me that the more they have, the worse they're going to get, honestly.
Well, you know, it's really bad. The last couple years, I'm not a big fan. Like this year, they're doing two nights, Saturday and Sunday, limited crowd. Thankfully, there's a crowd. I can't watch wrestling without a crowd. It's dreadful. But Stroh was talking about this on In the Room this week. And if you follow VOC Nation on Twitter, there's a video clip of this. But they were doing these marathon WrestleManias, 5-6 hour shows. And Manny, you've worked long TV tapings in your day. When you're at the end of a 6 hour taping, the crowd's sitting on their hands. Even good stuff. Nobody wants to cheer. They just want to get home.
Well, remember I told you I used to take my kids there to try out with WWE and I'd have to sit through that stuff. And I was sitting in that daggone catering room for 5-6 hours. I'm going, geez, don't these people get tired of this? And they do. You go out there and you look, I went out there to peek. You know, when R-Truth was in the match, I'd go out there and watch his match. And then you look at the crowd, no matter what he did, they were all sitting on their hands because they're tired. They're tired, you know. You can only keep their attention span so long, you know. And it's just, I don't know. It's tiring that when we used to do TV taping for WCW in Atlanta, you know, but it was only 3 hours. Thank God. We didn't have to go 6 hours. But that was tiring, too. So you just take it out of people, and they just don't know how to react anymore.
Yeah, well, I just the last couple years. Last year was different because it was all pre-taped and no fans. But the year before that, I think it was a 5 hour show. The year before that, 5 or 6, and you know, it's the crowd's hot for the first couple matches, and by the main event, everybody's dead. Everybody's trying to get home. I mean, the one year the buses and the trains were shut down in New York. Nobody could get home. What a terrible way to run things, but. Yeah, I don't know. I'm glad that maybe they learned some lessons and they're breaking it up into two nights, making it shorter. But I think you're probably going to get the same fans maybe in those two shows. And by the second night, they're probably going to be a little bit dead. But I don't know. It's nice to see people back in wrestling shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's good. It's nice to see people back in any sporting event, you know, any sporting event. Especially when football comes around. Hopefully everybody be vaccinated by then because it's a big difference when you have a crowd, you know. It'll be good to see all the people back to normal. We all get vaccinated and everybody cares for one another. This whole thing is getting ridiculous now. These anti-vaxxers and anti-maskers, it's just dumb. You know, we should take care of one another. That's what this nation was known for, you know. Being American, the American way, taking care of one another.
Let's get out of this mess and get back to normal. And speaking of Texas, Manny, I just want to say thank you to our neighbors down south. We were on the charts in Mexico for the first time, number 34 on the iTunes charts in Mexico. So thank you. We'll add that to the list.
Órale, locos de México, que no.
Gracias.
Gracias, amigo.
All right. We're going to talk territories again next week. We'll move into Florida. And a great show this week, Manny. Safe, have a safe and healthy and happy weekend. Enjoy your workout with your students. And that's it for this week for the Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez. I'm Bruce Wirtz. Send us out, Manny.
Thank you. Thank you, voice of the choice voice. And you take care. God bless you to every one of you, and stay tuned for another great episode.
All right, no BS with the Bull, right here on the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. See you next week, everybody.